Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this week by first-time guest, Bill Paulihan. What's up, Bill?
Hey, Zach. It's good to be on the show. I've been trying to get on for a while, but finally our schedules came together, and I'm super excited.
Yeah, we're talking about the episode Visitor this week, but you know, before we get into our episode discussion, since Bill's a first-time guest, Bill, tell us about how, you know, your Smallville fandom, your Superman fandom, how you got into all this good stuff that we love talking about here every week.
Okay, so first I need to point out my age. I'm actually 21, so I'm probably the youngest guest that you'll have on. But yeah, my fandom of Superman has been around since I was a little kid. I've always looked up to him. I always thought that he was like the hero, you know? And yeah, I learned about Smallville at a very young age. I just never got around to watching it until I think it was just when Man of Steel came out. I'm like, okay, I gotta watch a Superman show, because I had not seen any prior to that. And I have now gone on and since watched not only Smallville, but Adventures of Lois and Clark, Adventures of Superman with George Reeve, all that stuff. And yeah, I bought the entire series, so I am more than caught up with Smallville, and I just absolutely love it. I think it's a great reinterpretation of the character, as well as just a very good drama, honestly.
How old were you when you started watching Smallville?
I was probably, okay, let's see, 2013. I was a junior in high school. I was probably 17 when I watched it. So I got a lot of the angst,
right,
and all that stuff. And I sympathized with Clark a lot, you know, with the feelings of isolation. And, you know, I don't have superpowers, but, you know, all these themes, and it's always been prevalent in Superman mythos. And yeah, I really dug it. And even though we're on season two, I really, really decided that this is one of my favorite shows with season 5 and Brainiac. And that goes into my little Smallville fandom. I recently just met James Marsters, the guy who played Brainiac, and he was so cool about it. We just talked about like Smallville and how it was on the set and all that stuff. And he's just like, oh, it's awesome. Because, you know, the hardest problem with Superman is he's so powerful. So how do you make him relatable? Like, he's the best hero, but he's also the worst hero. He's a paradox. And it's a good solution that Alfred Gough and Miles Miller made up. And it's just make him a teenager and have him discover these abilities.
Now, you said season 5, you know, that's when you decided Smallville was your show. Is that your favorite season on the show?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
I when I first was watching Smallville, obviously when it was on the air, at the time I was like, and seasons 5 is the best season, all of the best, and it's still in my top 5 seasons. But looking back over it, I still think the nostalgia of like those first 3 years when Smallville was really its own thing still makes it those my top 3 seasons. 5 is up there, and also season 9 is one of my favorite seasons. So that's, I know it's like half the show, but those are my favorite seasons. But 5 is definitely, because 5, they really, 4 was a big miss, in my opinion, as I say many times on the podcast, but everyone else seems to love season 4, so I'm really looking forward to talking about that one when we get there and hearing everyone's opinions. So 5 was just a huge bounce-back season for me, watching it at the time, and we got so much of the mythology of Krypton, of course, Brainiac being in there, season-long antagonist, the threat of Zod coming out, you know, Luther Brainiac team up at the end of the season. So, so much work in there. The Daily Planet, you know, Chloe going to work there. Metropolis was starting to become a major part. So this is stuff we've been waiting for a long time. Clark and Lex, their antagonism, like their friendship's basically over this year, and they truly become antagonists. So, lots of stuff. And, you know, they thought the show was going to end in season 5. So that's kind of like they ramped up all the stakes at the time. Little did they know they were going to run for 5 more seasons, right?
Yeah, and then I know that they sort of made it up as they went along, but
no.
With the stuff that, I mean, most shows do that, but the way they did it for me, for the most part, was actually okay. For the most part, the latter half of Smallville has some of my least favorite episodes and seasons in general. And when we get there, I'm gonna begrudgingly go through it, but it's been a while since I've watched it, so I don't know.
Yeah, the nostalgic might kick in. You might remember it more fondly, but definitely I do feel on the whole the first half of the series is stronger than the second half, although there are some great – every season has some excellent episodes, but I think the consistency is at its strongest in the earlier seasons. So that's awesome. And even though you came to the party a little late, you still started watching it around the same time, and I think that's the perfect time to be introduced to Smallville when you are the age of Clark on the show, because you relate – I mean, you're a Superman fan already, but then you also relate to all like the – quote-unquote real-life stuff that he's going through in high school. So that those two fronts is what really cemented this show as my favorite show at the time. How long did it take you to watch the show?
Oh, man. Probably a good 3-4 months, maybe.
That's still incredibly fast.
When
217 episodes in about 3 months is like woo. You have a very different perspective than I did then, watching it over the course of 10 years on a weekly basis. So
I can see how it can be frustrating some weeks, like any show. It can be very frustrating some weeks, but it's much weirder when you watch it week to week than when you binge it. We're going to talk about the episode in a little bit, but I was kind of disappointed because the episode before Rosetta is probably my favorite episode, because not only because of the incredible Christopher Reeve, but just, I mean, we learned that was the first time in that show we had really learned of anything outside of the baby shuttle with Superman. So that was a big milestone, and it was sort of like a passing of the torch, and the episode following this, we'll get right into that.
All right. Well, I agree. It's a seminal moment in Smallville Rosetta, and this as a follow up Visitor is, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's like a natural follow up because it follows up on a lot of the things that Clark learned in Rosetta that inform his thoughts and opinions on what might be going on here. But at the same time, it's just the timing of it is a little odd. But Ken Biller had this to say about this episode. Again, quoting Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 2 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. He says, Visitor started from the notion of what would happen if somebody showed up and Clark began to believe that he wasn't the last person from his planet. It might be wishful thinking on his part, but this person might really be from Krypton. Society would think that this person was crazy and a freak, but he might not be. I totally get it. This is a great concept, I think, that... you know, you would have another person, because Clark has been dealing with meteor freaks and things like that, or people like that, for a couple years now. But now that he knows officially, like, he knows that he's an alien, right? I mean, there have been suspicions that he'd been an alien for all this time, but especially Season 2 really confirms that he's not of this planet. So for him to, he's been confirmed that he's alone. There's no one else like him. So he has to deal with that. So of course he's going to be looking for someone that he can relate to and is a fellow Kryptonian. So that's a great concept for a story. And concept, I think this episode gets an A+, right? But the execution, yeah, we'll talk about it. That's what these podcasts are all about. Was this the time to do it? I don't know. I remember. So how familiar are you with the comic books at all?
I'm very familiar. I'm looking at my Death of Superman run, like the entire run from the Death of Superman to Superman Doomsday. So I'm very well versed in the comic.
Very good. Very good. And then do you watch Supergirl by any chance?
Oh, yeah. I love Supergirl.
Okay. So the character of Mon-El, right, who's on Supergirl now, I remember back in the speculation days, like, you know, 2003 when this episode came out, a lot of fans were like, oh, man, is this Cyrus' character? Is he Mon-El? That would make sense, because in the comic books, in the Superboy era of comic books, when Superman was just a boy, there was a – it's pre-Crisis continuity, mind you, when there was a Superboy. Not the clone Superboy, but comic books are so confusing, right? But not the clone Superboy, but Superman when he was a boy, right? But there was a spaceship landing in Smallville, and a guy came out, and they named him Mon-El. Superboy thought he was a fellow Kryptonian because he had similar powers and all that, but he was not Kryptonian. He was a Daxamite, and he had the reverse powers, or I guess not the reverse powers, but the reverse strengths and weaknesses. Like lead made him sick, in the same way that Kryptonite would make Superman sick, Superboy sick. So that's how they figured out, oh, you're not Kryptonian after all. And then to protect him, I forget the specifics, but to protect him, Superboy ended up putting him in the Phantom Zone until they could find a cure. For I believe maybe he had like lethal lead poisoning or something like that. It's kind of hardcore because that actually happens in real life to people. So it's kind of odd to say that about a comic book character. But I think he had some kind of lethal dose of lead poisoning or something. And in order to preserve his life, Superboy projected into the Phantom Zone. And that's when the mythology of Mon-El there goes. And you know, if I'm wrong about any of those specifics, please chime in, guys, listeners. That's what a lot of people thought, like, oh man, maybe this character's Mon-El, right? Much like in Rosetta when Dr. Walgan gets zapped by the wall and then he comes back in season 2, people are like, oh man, is he gonna be possessed by Brainiac or the Eradicator or something like that? I mean, this is some deep comic book talk here, and this is Smallville was not ready for that yet, right? Smallville was not ready for that. Now fast forward 6-7 years, that these characters are everywhere. But surprisingly, Mon-El, who was like on the top, Mon-El, Kenny Braverman, you know, those characters, those guys make sense to show up in Smallville, but they never did, which is interesting. So with a character like Cyrus here in this episode, that would have been one approach, but I guess they didn't want to quite go all that way yet.
Yeah, the world wasn't really ready for like super deep comic book character lore, you know? And, I mean, we knew about Clark Kent, Lex Luthor, Lana Lang, all those things. Those are, like, very famous characters that many people can tell you about. Like, oh, yeah, Lex Luthor, bald guy, bald evil guy, Superman, just the superhero. And it's like Batman as well. It's like the character is so well known. It's so well known you even know their origin because it's been done to death so many times. And for the time, I can understand why they would be hesitant to do that. Now, they opened up a little bit in season 3 with, like, you know, Maggie Sawyer, Morgan Edge, all that sort of stuff. And that for me, was the beginning of a change, you know? And because there wasn't really a superhero show that ever did this. I mean, like, Lois and Clark, you can argue they did introduce some characters as well, but they weren't really, you know, they weren't modernized.
Yeah, they were through a 1990s broadcast television lens.
Oh, very much so, especially in Lois and Clark.
Mm-hmm. And then on The Adventures of Superman with George Reeves, it didn't fight anyone. It was just like gangsters and mad scientists and con men, right, and robots. No comic book antagonist there, which, I mean, they were on a super budget, no pun intended, but I wish they would have gotten somebody. I mean, they could have had a Lex Luthor, they could have had a bald guy on The Adventures of Superman with George Reeves, but, you know, they just never did, so.
Yeah, but thankfully, many years later, we have so many superhero shows that you can just basically introduce anybody, and it's okay, because, you know, people are just used to it.
So it sounds like Man of Steel ignited or reignited your Superman fandom. Where do you rank all these guys that, you know, have been played Superman in the last few years? I mean, you got your Henry Cavill, you got your Tom Welling, you got your, you know, got Brandon Routh up in there, and then obviously Tyler Hoechlin. So where do all those guys fall for you?
Yeah, it's always great to see that this character will always be reinvented, and it's also fun just to rank them. And if we're talking TV Superman, I'm going to rank it probably Tyler Hoechlin and then Tom Welling for as my like my top two guys. Dean Cain obviously is up there, but I don't know. I didn't really like his Superman. Like, I like Dean Cain. I think he's cool. But I don't know. There was just something about his Superman that was off. And I think Tyler Hoechlin was a better Clark Kent than Superman. And I also have some problems with the design of the costume. I I don't know what it is, but
it's the shoulder straps is what it is.
Yeah, the shoulder straps. It looks so stupid. But he's a good throwback, and Tom Welling is always going to be the best Clark Kent, because we've had the most time to get to know him as Clark Kent. I mean, 10 years, and he doesn't become Superman till the very end, which is what Smallville was marketed as. It was a prequel series to Superman. So that's very hard to rank Tom Welling in, like, the Superman category, but obviously number one is going to be Christopher Reeves, obviously. I mean, that man was Superman on and off camera, and it's really sad that he's no longer with us, but he leaves behind a great legacy. And Henry Cavill, if they give him some more stuff to do, then I really feel like he can nail it, because he's a pretty good actor. I saw him on The Tudors, which was this Showtime show about Henry VIII, and he was really good in that. And yeah, I like Batman vs. Superman and Man of Steel very much. I acknowledge they have problems, but I still enjoy it for what it is, and I think it's a very interesting take on the entire, like, you know, superhero mythos, really. And it's you deconstruct this man that is so powerful, and you try to make him relatable, because that's always been Superman's hardest obstacle in media, is how do you make this god relatable? And it's you put him through the hero's journey, and I can't wait for Justice League, and I really hope that Henry Cavill has more time as Superman, because I know he has it in him.
Well, he's dead, so he's probably not going to be in the movie that much, right?
Yeah, but I mean, we know he's going to come back.
What?
I mean,
yeah, no, you're right. I agree. I think Cavill's a good actor, man. I've seen him in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He's genius in it. He has so much charisma and charm, and it's like, man, I wish they could channel that more in the Superman character in the DCEU, and everyone would like Superman a lot more if they did.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going that way with what I'm seeing with Wonder Woman and all that sort of stuff. But as of right now, I can't really say. And
What about Brandon Routh, though, man?
Brandon Routh he just does a very good Christopher Reeves impression for me. Like, he's come into his own thanks to Legends of Tomorrow. But I don't know. It also helps that he looks very similar to Christopher Reeves. That's probably why they cast him.
I am going to have to stop you right there. That's the third time you've called him Christopher Reeves.
I can't help it. I love
it's Christopher. It's Christopher Reeve, not Christopher Reeves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking of George Reeves.
Yes, and I believe you called George Reeves George Reeve earlier. So
that's always been.
You kind of crossed the streams there, so I felt the need, because the listeners will say something. I felt the need to call it out, and now it's been corrected, and we'll move on. We'll move on, Bill.
Yeah, that's always been confusing for me. So if I get it wrong, screw it.
If you call him Christopher Reeves one more time, I'm kicking you off this podcast.
Okay, well, Christopher Reeve is obviously, he's the best Superman, and there's something about that smile and those blue eyes and everything. And yeah, Reeves' portrayal is like, it's on a pedestal for a reason. And yeah, I think Tom Welling does a good job with the Superman mythos. And I love that he didn't read any comic books. He's like, no, I just want to make this character my own. And yeah, he really did. He made him a confused teenager, and that's what the series is about. It's him discovering who he is, and there's something really appealing about that.
Yeah, no, I'll speak to that. I often get annoyed when people say, no, you know, I didn't want to read the books or, you know, the material, the source material. I just want to make it my own, man. But with Tom Welling playing a young Clark Kent, I actually think that's the correct approach. because he's learning all the stuff as the character learns this stuff. Like, I remember in the DVD special features, you know, they have a special feature about, you know, Rosetta and Tom Welling and Christopher Reeve meeting and filming those scenes and all that stuff. And he was saying Christopher Reeve is telling him the stuff about Superman. He's like, whoa, 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 I don't want to know that yet, you know, because the character's not supposed to know that yet. And I actually think that helped his portrayal as Clark Kent. So I think that's a rare case of not wanting to put a, you know, a color your interpretation of a character you're playing. I think that's valid in his case here, because he's not playing Superman yet. He's playing pre-Superman. So any of the stuff he might learn might, you know, find its way into his interpretation, which shouldn't quite be there yet. So that's my take on his take on that. But yeah, Tom Welling, solid. I don't think there's been a miss as far as any of the guys who have played Superman. I think they all have their strengths and weaknesses. And I'm glad there's so many guys. It's like James Bonds, right? I mean, there's so many James Bonds, and so many have their strengths and weaknesses, and I'm glad there's such a variety, because each one of them brings something unique to the role. So let's go ahead and get into it. Visitor.
Cyrus, what are you doing here, Clark? I heard about your suspension today. Wanted to make sure you're okay.
High school's irrelevant. Just gives me more time to concentrate on my work.
Where's your parents?
Foster parents. They work late. They don't bother me as long as they get their monthly check. Is this interrogation over?
I heard about the rumor from your old school.
That I'm an alien. You've come to see if it's true.
I have an open mind.
If I showed you any of my other special powers, would that appease you? Go away, Clark. You're just like all the others. I won't be ridiculed by your kind anymore.
I'm not here to make fun of you, or to get you in trouble.
Then what do you want?
The truth. I promise I won't tell anyone.
I input these coordinates into my transmitter, send a signal to my planet.
How do you know the coordinates are correct?
I used to have these weird dreams. That's when they were given to me. Afterwards, I'd wake up in these strange places, frighten my old foster parents. They had me locked away eventually. I can't imagine any other race being as barbaric as humans.
Why would they do to you?
They tried to make me believe I was crazy. That I was really one of you.
Cyrus, I want to believe you. What kind of proof do you have?
Whatever proof I had was destroyed the day of the meteor shower. That's when I arrived on Earth. An elderly couple found me on the outskirts of town and raised me. After they died, I bounced around between foster parents, but I kept trying to get back here.
Why?
Smallville's ground zero for the signal. I have to be here so my real parents can take me home.
Visitor is the 18th episode of Smallville's second season. It aired on April 15th, 2003. It was written by Philip Levins and directed by Rick Rosenthal. Rick Rosenthal, this is his second episode of seven that he directed on Smallville. He previously directed Rush this season. And he is, you know, I guess most well known for directing Halloween 2 and Halloween Resurrection. So, you know, that's some legitimate resume coming in here with Rick Rosenthal, huh? Have you ever seen the Halloween movies?
I have. They go from pretty good to just downright terrible. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Sometimes they really, really hurt.
Yeah. No. The word on the street is they're making some kind of reboot, but not really. You know, these requels are in vogue now. You know, the Force Awakens, the Creeds, the sequels that are more or less remakes of the original film. And it sounds like that's what they're looking for with Halloween right now. It's going to be from Blumhouse Productions, the guys who have done lots of these horror movies, but are probably most famous now for Get Out. They team with Jordan Peele, so legitimate talent going on there. And they team with M. Night Shyamalan. You know, Split, amazing film. Have you seen Split?
Yeah, I saw it with my dad. My dad freaked out, but I was into it. And yeah, I'm not going to ruin the big reveal because, you know, M. Night Shyamalan, he loves him, his big reveals.
All right. And he's back now. I'm so happy to see that he's back and he's good again.
Yeah, it was really good too. It would have been a fine movie had that big reveal not happened, but that just made the film so much better.
Exactly. So this episode, ratings-wise, right, it's the lowest-rated episode of Season 2, which is very disappointing considering the previous episode was Rosetta. Now, Smallville did go on hiatus after Rosetta. You know, it did its big February sweeps, and then it went off the air for gosh, almost 2 months. That sounds familiar from this podcast, right? But when people finally, I guess people, like, they had gotten out of the habit of watching Smallville for a couple months, and they come back, and just to put it in perspective here, Rosetta had 8.7 million viewers. Visitor had 5.9. So it's like, ouch, that's quite a drop. So don't go on hiatus so long, guys. I'll try to keep that in mind for the podcast as well, but come on, Smallville. And that's the problem. You try to stretch 22 episodes over like a 7-month span, right? You go on these breaks. Of course, I think it's good to have your winter hiatus, right? Because, you know, people are, it's the holidays, you know, this and that, right? But it's always that awkward spring hiatus, which gives you like no episodes in like March and April, which is odd to me. And then they come back like at the end of April and beginning of May. Again, it sounds very familiar to what we're doing on this podcast, but lesson learned, guys. I get you. All right. I can't tell you how many messages I got from people over the past two plus months. Hey, when's the podcast come back? Well, keep continuing. You know, they have been heard. They have been seen. Thank you so much for everybody for your fandom. And it encourages you to like come. Not that I wasn't going to come back, right? But it's like, yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to coming back because I know people are waiting for the show to come out. But anyway, all that to say, lowest rated episode, not deserved at all, because I actually do like this episode. And the title Visitor, obviously a reference to Strange Visitor from Another Planet, right? That's what I took from it.
Yeah, this episode did not need to be the lowest rated. I mean, it's not bad. Like, I don't hate it. I don't love it either. Coming from the high of Rosetta, it's kind of like, how can you follow up with that?
And yeah, at the time, I found this episode very disappointing because of the resolution. But revisiting it now, I have a whole new appreciation for it, I find. So let's get into the episode. Let's get into the nitty-gritty here. It starts out, they're apparently in the electronics lab, as we come to learn later on in the episode, which looks especially like shop class. Again, I wish I had all these cool classes when I was in high school. But anyway, students are working on various... looked to me like Spencer's Gifts toys. I don't know what you thought, Billy, but
yeah, they were very weird. I didn't understand what they were doing. I mean, like, Clark and Pete are doing something with oranges. I think they're trying to make a battery, and you know, because it has acid, and it, like, they're hooking up all these wires and like all this stuff. I mean, that's what I assume that they could do with all these oranges. And yeah, and then Cyrus comes and he takes their outlet, and then Clark just goes, "Well, yeah, sure, you can borrow our outlet," just sarcastically.
Yeah. So did Cyrus look like Eminem to you?
A little bit, yeah. With the hoodie, the hat,
and the headphones.
Always carries those around.
That must have been an influence, right?
Yeah. Who would know? Marshall Mathers would take from Smallville.
I'm not sure which one came first there, but someone was influencing someone there. And, you know, Clark comments on how, you know, he's kind of weird. And Chloe gives the info dump that he transferred to Smallville a couple of weeks ago. And I like that. At least they address the fact that, yes, you haven't seen this guy before. We know, you know, because there's nothing more annoying than when, you know, especially, you know, third, fourth season, there's like this character who's like, oh, yeah, so-and-so from so-and-so's class. I'm like, no. I've been watching this show. I've watched every episode of the show so far. I've never seen this person before. Don't act like, you know, they've just been part of the gang this whole time, right?
Yeah, it's like what they did in Lost. I think it was season 3. There was these two characters called Nikki and Paolo. They were there the entire time, and then nobody in the Lost fan base appreciated it. They were very, very mad, and they are the most hated characters on Lost because of it. And they're also just terribly written.
Well, on a show like that, you just can't introduce characters like that because there's a set number of people. Like, you know, on Smallville, yeah, you can transfer in and out of the school. You can move, whatever. On Star Trek, on most of the Star Trek shows, you can get, oh, well, they transferred to another ship, right? But, like, Star Trek Voyager, for example, you can't be having new characters come and go because, no, there's 170 people or whatever on the ship. There's a set number, okay? So don't be introducing some major character that we've never seen before. And it's the same thing with Lost. Like, you have a set number of people who survived the plane crash. There's no one other than the others and all that stuff, right? That's a whole other category, but they can't be doing that, shows.
It pisses me off when they try to they try to connect the shows. Like, oh, yeah, they were just over here this entire time. No, it's like you either start or you don't. And I'd really appreciate Smallville the way that they were just like, oh, yeah, because a high school is a big place, so it makes sense that they can introduce these people, like, they were probably in background or something, but they don't, like, put them in the situations with, like, Clark and Lana or Chloe and Pete or anything. They weren't like, oh, they're talking to somebody else or something. No. No, it's just, like, it makes sense.
Well, Cyrus is played by Jeremy Lelliott, and he is from Houston, Texas, so shout out my own hometown. He's best known for his role in Seventh Heaven. He played a character called Mike Pierce. He was also in Safe Harbor, played a character called Turner Loring. And then he was apparently in the movie Jack with Robin Williams. Did you ever see Jack?
Oh, yeah.
The one where he ages at four times the rate of a normal child. I love that movie. Apparently people don't like it. I love that movie. Like, I find it hilarious. So Jeremy played a character called Johnny Duffer. So next time I rewatch Jack, I'll have to keep an eye out for him. Obviously, he would have been one of the kids, you know, one of the kid friends of Jack at the time. That's the story on Jeremy Lelliott. So I think he did a very good job in this episode because he has to come off as kind of a weirdo, you know, but he pulls it off very nicely, I think. So Cyrus is going around doing his thing, and Chloe leaves. But did you notice when Chloe walked off, she kind of like gave Clark this hug and like got really close in his personal space there? Did you notice that little moment?
I did. I was like, what? Why are you so close, Chloe? I mean, I know they're friends and everything, but it's like, you know, the people have boundaries.
Exactly. I just found it very funny. She's like all up on him as she leaves. I'm like, I understand, Chloe, you're in love with him, but it was just some personal space violation that made me laugh. But so she leaves, and Cyrus's lack of people skills that Clark commented on is coming back to bite him, because he does the same thing that he did to Clark and Pete with some jocks, some bullies, steals their power, and they got a problem with it. So they rip off his headphones and they start passing around his transmitter, as he describes it. And I got to say, as ridiculous as it was, because they're like, "Whoa, the transmitter!" Like, they're acting real stupid. It was pretty amusing because that's how like idiot jocks in high school act, right?
Yeah, and also, I think it was because he took something from them, and then they're just like, "Hey, give that back," and all that stuff. And you know, Cyrus just he just walks away, just without even saying a word, just walks away, and yeah, tries to mind his own business. And yeah, so, I understand why they did that, but then, like, later on the episode, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, these bullies push it too far. But then, Clark, you know, the Clark's defense, because I was a little disappointed when Clark, like, calling out this weird guy. I'm like, Clark, that's who you're supposed to be, right? You're an outsider, right? So it was very Clark Kent for him to come in and step up for Cyrus once these guys start, you know, ganging up on him. He's like, hey, leave him alone. And I had to laugh when the lead, you know, bully gets up in Clark's face and literally has to get on his tiptoes to get in his face and threaten him, right?
Yeah, because he's so tall.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do, Kent?
Like, what are you going to do? Like, I'm 6 inches like, taller than you.
Like, dude, if you only knew.
Cyrus, he looks at this wall, and the wall bursts into flames. And, you know, it appears that he uses heat vision just without the visual effects that we're so used to seeing, right? It's as if, you know, Clark used heat vision, and we saw it from like Chloe or Lana or Pete's point of view, right? Because that's always been my interpretation with heat vision, much like X-ray vision. We're just seeing, you know, we see an interpretation that shows us what's going on. But if you were in the real world, like standing there next to Clark, like you would just see the wall go into flames. You wouldn't see beams coming out of his eyes, right? Because he uses heat vision all the time around people, and no one says, "Hey, I saw those heat waves coming out of your eyes," right? And that's what the genius thing about Smallville was, changing it from laser vision, you know, laser beams coming out of his eyes, to these heat waves. Clark's like, "Whoa, this guy must have heat vision." And then we get to the opening credits, and that's like our big revelation of him having powers. So, what, you know, when you're watching this episode for the first time, do you remember what did you think he was really going to be an alien? I mean, what did you think about Cyrus here?
I didn't know what to think of. I was like, okay, this guy's definitely, he's got something. And also, he just sets that whole wall of tools on fire. So I was like, are those tools going to be okay? Because, I mean, I don't know. I focus on a lot of weird stuff. But I was like, how do they get those tools on fire? And then I'm like, okay, something's happening with this kid. I don't know what it is, but something is up.
Yeah, and they explain what happens later, and I don't know if it tracks very well. Like, why would he do that? I mean, we'll explain. I don't want to quote unquote spoil it just quite yet. But I don't know if it tracks, because obviously the first half of this episode is all about like building and building evidence that Cyrus is really an alien, or very well may even be from Krypton. But I don't know if this particular incident tracks for later. But anyway, we go to opening credits. We come back. Clark is doing chores, farm chores. Lana rides up on her horse to kind of talk to him about, hey, I heard what happened in the electronics lab. That's how, because I just assumed it was like shop class or something, right? but it was the electronics lab. And we established that her horse is sick. And technically, it's Whitney's horse, Tyson. And this is a good reference to Whitney, because they don't really, you know, there's a lot of death on this show. I think we have a counter for it and all. And these kids get over this trauma pretty quick, right? Not that everyone needs to be all mopey every episode because life is so hard and all that, but it would be nice for some kind of, you know, acknowledgement that there were some major people in these people's lives that are no longer here and they have passed away. And this was this episode, I had totally forgotten this. I mean, I remember the horse and all that in this episode. I forgot the whole factor that it was Whitney's horse, and that adds an extra layer of emotion. And especially when you're caring for an animal that was like somebody else's animal, and that's like the last like reminder of them that you have, you know, so that's tough. You know, we can get into that more later when more things happen with Tyson the horse here, but that we just plant the seeds that's going on with their horse there, which will come into play much later. But then we cut to Luther Mansion, and Helen walks in, and she has a tabloid paper about, you know, paparazzi spying on her and Lex, and she's all mad that he didn't tell her about it. And he's like, well, I thought I bought up every copy in Smallville, which I thought was a great Lex line and something totally he would do, right?
Totally. I love how it looked as well. It's like, I see those papers in the store all the time, and I'm just like, wow, they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. But it said, the headline was "Gold Digging Doc Bags Billionaire Baldy." And I'm like, how rude. Like, what paper would print that? That's so mean.
The Metropolis Inquisitor, no doubt, right?
Yeah, only in Metropolis.
Oh, man. But no, that was a great headline, spot on to what those kind of rags do, right? And Helen has still not moved in, if you remember. Lex offered her a key to his place a couple episodes ago. She still hasn't moved in, and her excuse is, my lease isn't up yet, and I haven't had time to pack, which is, like, such a straw man excuse, right? And this Alex is perfect. He, like, pulls out his phone, and he's like, okay, I'll pay to break your lease, and I'll have movers at your place in an hour. It's, like, problem solved, right? It's, like, stop putting this off. So she's kind of hesitant at first, and obviously there's more going on here, right, emotionally, for her not to, you know, move in with Lex. But she says, well, can you make it 2 hours? And then it's like, oh, okay, so they're going to get through this. So she's moving in. Helen is finally moving in to the mansion. Cut back to the Kent farm. Clark is still doing his chores. So this must be, like, the longest set of chores he has ever done, because he's wearing the same clothes from that day. Lana has come by and left. Now Chloe's showing up to talk to him, and it's like, Clark, I thought chores took you, like, 5 minutes, man. But anyway.
I guess he likes to take his time and really, really sell the whole farm boy thing. She pulls up in her Volkswagen, just immediately goes, being Chloe with the whole bubbly personality, I know your secret. And then he's like, oh, you do? And then
and it's about the Kents boarding Tyson, Lana and Whitney's horse, because you know, the bills are going up for Whitney's mom, and she didn't have the finances to keep him boarded, and Clark offers to board him at the Kent farm. So, I mean, it is a farm after all, so it's a logical thing. But Chloe still gives him crap about it, as she should, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then Clark mentions to her that, oh, I heard the electronics lab is still closed. I'm like, of course it's still closed. It's the same day. Again, playing the what day is it game. What time of the day is it?
Not new. What's that?
But because they're all wearing the same clothes from that day. So, of course the electronics lab is still closed. It burned down like 3 hours ago. Clark, what are you talking about? But anyway, Chloe explains that Cyrus has been suspended. His science project has been confiscated, and she gives some more exposition on him, that he went to junior high in Granville, our favorite other town to mention other than Metropolis and Smallville. Always talking about Granville, right? And he told some kids there, I know, right? And he told some kids there that he was an alien. And Clark's like, so what if he was an alien? How would that make you feel? And she's like, oh, that would be so amazing. You could, the experiences they have. And, you know, she's really excited the fact that someone could be an alien. Does she think he is? No. But she would be excited if he was. And that just, again, shows the reasons why Chloe is perfect for Clark. And Clark is an idiot for not dating Chloe. But
Clark is such an idiot. And it's like, dude, she's right there.
And yeah, very different from Lana.
Yeah, and we'll get Lana's reaction at the end. And it's like, again, Clark.
Oh my God,
and,
it's perfect.
An AV example of why you should be with one and not with the other one. But anyway, so hearing all this, Clark goes to Cyrus's place. He runs into Cyrus and he's like, oh, hey, I'm sorry to hear that you were suspended and all that. And I love what Cyrus says. He says, high school is irrelevant. Just the way
because it's true.
The way he says it, it's so funny. And he has foster parents, and it's established that his foster parents work late, and they don't care what Cyrus is up to as long as they get their check from the government. So that's kind of a sad state of affairs with his personal life. But it explains why we have yet more absentee parents in Smallville. You know, when the show started at the very beginning, they made a conceited effort to kind of show parents, right? Like Bug Boy, his mom. And Tina Greer, her mom, right? So at least there were some parents going around. But as the show progresses, these kids have such terrible absentee parents. Even the main character's parents, right? Where is Chloe's dad, Vin? Right? Aunt Nell moved, right? So
Pete's mom.
We see Pete's mom once over the entire course of the show, right?
Yeah, and it's the only parents are, of course, Clark's parents. That's literally it. Everybody else, well, no, Clark and Lionel. We see Lionel, and aside from that, nobody else has parents. They just mysteriously disappear.
Clark asks proof that Cyrus is an alien, and Cyrus is, you know, skeptical at first. He thinks Clark is just another goofy kid who wants, you know, who heard something exciting and stuff. But Clark wins him over with his earnest interest, and so Cyrus gives Clark coordinates that, quote, came to him in a dream. And he says that he used to wake up in strange places, and you know, these are the things he's telling Clark that, you know, as quote-unquote proof that he's an alien. Now, the whole waking up in strange places thing ties into the last episode, because that's what Clark was doing. This stuff still could be, it's open enough, that could go either way. Now, the coordinates thing that came to him in a dream, that's very suspicious. Pete talks about it later, where he could have maybe gotten this information, so I guess that tracks, but we'll get into that in that later scene. He also says he came to Earth the day of the meteor shower. And that an elderly couple found him and raised him. So he has the comic book Superman's origin, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. That was a cool touch. So this evidence is like, okay, well, could go either way still. You know, nothing is really conclusive one or the other. So I like how they're drawing this out. So they come back to the Kent farm, and Jonathan finds Martha in the storm cellar staring at the ship. And they ironically say the ship gave them the miracle of the baby, which... the ship giveth and the ship taketh away at the season finale. Spoilers.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know if that was intentional or not. I don't know if they knew what they were going to do at this point or not. But anyway, I mean, Martha, obviously she's never been pregnant before, so she wants a second opinion from Dr. Helen Bryce. And Jonathan says, no, I don't want our family secrets to be pillow talk for the Luthers, right? But the reason she wants to talk to Helen is because, you know, back in the episode Fever, where Clark was sick, she had the blood. So she knows something is up with Martha and Clark and the whole Kent family. You don't really know what's going on there. You don't know what her intentions are. So, I mean, I'm with Jonathan on this. What's your take? Like, do you think Martha should just trust Helen, or are you with Jonathan? I know Jonathan's a lot more overprotective all the time, but I think he's in the right here.
No, I'm with Jonathan, because it's like, yeah, this woman has a personal connection with Lex, and obviously, you know, Lex likes to keep secrets as well. Doesn't help that his father is a complete jerk, and... Yeah, at first when I saw Smallville, I didn't understand. I'm like, Jonathan, why are you giving Lex such a hard time? He saved Clark. Well, Clark saved him, and so he was grateful. But then I later understood, because, you know, the whole Luther family has basically just ruined their reputation, and so has really ruined the town. And so I understood Jonathan's point of view, but I also got, like, why Martha would want – she wants to talk to somebody about it, and she for once doesn't want to talk to her husband about it, and she clearly can't talk about it with Clark because, I mean, he's just a teenager. So, yeah, I mean, it would be something that I understood with them. It's one of those interesting things where you see both point of views.
Right. Then we go to the Talon, and Clark is, you know, doing what Clark usually does on the show. He's reading a book that is extremely specific to the situation he's dealing with. He's reading a book called Identity Crisis, Mental Illness. And I thought, is this a reference to Identity Crisis, the comic book storyline, you know, from DC Comics? I thought maybe. So that was a cool reference if it was. Lex comes in and sees that he's reading this, and Clark says, it's for a friend. And I mean, it really is, but it's just funny.
Oh, yeah. I love how just how Lex is just so nonchalant about it. He's just like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, sure. I'm used to it at this point.
Well, Clark tells him that he has a friend that thinks he's an alien, and Lex says, which means he isn't. Clark's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, come on, Clark. If you really were an alien, would you go around telling people about it? It's like, well, obviously not, right? So great, great ironic Smallville dialogue. I love that.
Oh, yeah, it's some of the best. Lex and Pete have the best lines in the entire series.
For very different reasons, but yes.
For very different reasons, but just Lex is just so blunt about everything, and I love that.
So then we go back to the Kent farm, and Tyson has collapsed. He's not doing well, and Lana's upset about it, and you know Clark's upset about it. And I will say, I'll tie this into a recent personal thing that I had. It is tough because, again, this is Whitney's horse, right? And Whitney has passed away, so this is like the last like living piece of Whitney, right, for Lana. And it's a tough thing. And, you know, my grandfather passed away a couple years ago, but my family still had one of his dogs, you know, who lived with us, you know, and we took care of him. And recently, you know, she lived to 17. So a good long life for a dog, right?
Yeah.
But it was her time, so we had to put her to sleep. And that was really tough because it's like, you know, obviously, you know, I love animals, dogs especially, right? So that would be tough enough. But knowing this is my grandpa's dog, you know, and it was around the same time of year he had passed away a couple years previously. So it's like all those emotions come back up about that kind of thing, right? So it's a double whammy, right? It's like the loss of like an animal you love plus like what it represents, the connection to another person that you loved, right? So that's another layer of this episode I hadn't really thought about before until I was rewatching it for this. Like, man, you know, I really get the grief
anguish
here. Yeah. But lucky for Lana, Cyrus shows up to accuse Clark of telling people his secret. I guess Chloe wanted to interview him or something. So Clark didn't really have anything to do with that. Chloe did all the investigating herself. Cyrus, as we find out, has the power to heal. So he goes over to Tyson, lays hands on him, and has this energy comes out of his hand. So he basically has Mr. Linderman's powers from Heroes. You ever watch Heroes?
No, I have not watched Heroes. Though I have met Milo Ventimiglia, and he is a wonderful man.
Cool. Well, I would recommend watching the first season of Heroes and stopping there.
That's what everybody tells me. They're like, "Oh, first season of Heroes is great," and I'm like, "Yeah, what about the rest of it?" And they just don't say anything.
It's Heroes is complicated, man. I've said it before on the show. If I truly ever do a sequel podcast, I might do Always Hold On to Heroes because I have such strong opinions about that show. And it was a contemporary of Smallville. It was interesting. It came and went during Smallville's run. So that's how long Smallville was. It outlasted Heroes.
I do know what you could call it. You can call it Save the Cheerleader, Save the World, Heroes Podcast.
I was going to go for the Always Hold On to Fill in the Blank for everything I do from this podcast forward. Even if it wouldn't work.
Either way, it would be fun.
It would be amusing to me. But anyway, I mean, there's lots of crossover because there's only so many superpowers. Look at the X-Men, right? There's only so many superpowers to go around. But anyway, that's made me think of Mr. Linderman from Heroes, and there is an editing gaffe here. Cyrus takes off. He finally takes off his beanie to heal Tyson, and Tyson gets up and, you know, walks off. But there's a wide shot, and then a tight shot, and we cut back to a wide shot. And in the first wide shot, Cyrus doesn't have his beanie on because he'd taken it off. We cut to a shot of, you know, Tyson getting up, and then we cut back to the wide shot, and Cyrus's beanie is back on his head. I'm like, oh, they use different takes there. Continuity fail, guys. Come on now. But these are the things you notice when you rewatch the series through a critical eye. So anyway, I just want to point that out. But he's fine. Tyson's fine. Cyrus has healed him. I mean, this is definite proof now that he has some kind of ability, right?
Oh, very much so. And then afterwards, Clark is just like, I think Cyrus is from Krypton, but then Jonathan's like, yeah, did he say he's from Krypton? Clark, no. He's like, okay, well, then why do you believe him, son? You know.
Well, I mean, he is very desperate, you know, and they even say, like, we know how hard you want there to be others out there like you, but people have power. This is Smallville, right? So it's nothing you haven't seen before in the concept of a human being having powers. You must be an alien. No. It's Smallville. There are a lot of Dr. Swan name drops, you know, the Rosetta being the previous episode, right? They said, well, there's only one ship. There was only one message. He's like, what if Dr. Swan is wrong? Like, he really wants us to be true. Because, I mean, it hit him pretty hard to know that he was the last survivor of his planet. And he does make a good point. He's like, look, I didn't get heat vision until last year. Maybe people from Krypton have different powers, or maybe we're going to develop the same powers over time. And that's an interesting point because, you know, they don't know. They never met anyone else from Krypton before. They don't know how this works. And that was an interesting idea. I know in the early days of Smallville, they talked about, like, giving Clark, like, temporary powers. Like one day, like, these is just, I read this in an interview somewhere. I'm not sure who said it or in what context, but it was like, you know, one day Clark wakes up and he's green or something, right? I mean, that would be cool, a superhero puberty, that kind of thing. They never really did that. They only did that once in season 9, in the episode Echo. What, season 9, right? It was either season 9 or 10, one of the two. Those later episodes really start to blur together for me. No pun intended, since Clark was the blur. But it's the one where he can read people's minds. Jor-El gives him the power to read minds.
Oh, yeah, that was season 9.
Okay, I thought so. Toy Man is in it. That wasn't like a development thing. That's just Jor-El giving him a power for a while, like to try it out or whatever. So I don't know. I thought that would have been interesting if he had a temporary power like that for like a season, if they would have, you know, once they ran out of powers to give him, like if I had, you know, around season 6 where they had no more new powers other than flight, it might have been cool to give him something like that, like power to heal, like, you know, for like half a season or something. But hey, they did it for Chloe. She had some powers that didn't last,
yeah,
right?
She becomes a healer.
Anyway. Yeah. So we cut back to Luther Mansion, and Helen is moving in, and she has a master key, a skeleton key that's supposed to open every door. She's going from room to room, just getting the lay of the land, right? And then she comes across a locked door, and it kind of reminded me of Batman Forever when, like, Dick Grayson's all walking around, and he's like, why is this door locked? You know, there's the one door in the mansion that's locked, and Alfred tells him, it's like Master Wayne's dead wives are in there. But the security guard here, who is a recurring character, I believe his name is Darius.
It is Darius.
He's been in the show before, and he plays a slightly bigger role later in season 3 with some occurrences that go on at Luther Mansion. But he says that only Mr. Luther has access to that room, ma'am. Come this way. So it's off limits. So, of course, Helen's going to zero in on that one. Hundreds of rooms in this mansion. God forbid there's one room she can't get into. So, you know, that's that door will be open by the end of the episode. It's very interesting what we find in there. But we go back to Smallville High School, and Chloe's explaining that Cyrus set the wall on fire through magic. They found a strip of magnesium hidden behind the wall that could be triggered by a button. So that explains, and she even demonstrates to Clark like how that's accomplished. And that just struck me as very odd. Like, why would he like plant magnesium there behind that wall of tools? What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, I was like, so did he know beforehand that was that like a fail safe in case he got bullied in the electronics room or something? Like, I didn't know. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure, Chloe. They don't really go into it. They just sort of accept it, like, oh, okay. And I'm like, no, you go back and you show me, like, if he knew or not, because they make it out to be that he didn't. But yeah, conveniently he has this button that'll trigger this magnesium that'll set the tools on fire in the electronics room, and yeah.
Well, Ken Biller agrees with us in the Smallville Companion. He says, it seemed a bit incredible to me that a kid would think that he might need to scare off some bad guys, so he would rig an explosion and then make it look like he'd shot fire out of his eyes in order to scare them. I always believed it was enough for Clark to say, who knows what people are like where I come from, they could all have different powers. And I agree. I feel like the episode could have worked exactly the same had we not had the, did Cyrus use heat vision? Question. I mean, that's what, you know, kicks off the episode, right? That's, oh my god, somebody save me, right? That's the dramatic thing that kicks us into the opening credits and intrigues Clark from the start. But I think just hearing the stories that he's an alien and how odd he was anyway would have been enough. I mean, the Kents ask him, like, any indication of strength or speed? He's like, no, but, you know, who knows what everybody's powers are. So I agree with Ken Biller there. I felt like the playing the heat vision card was a little too much.
Yeah, it was they had set up enough stuff to where Clark would be suspicious. And Clark is very desperate in this episode. Just, he wants to believe that Cyrus is this alien so badly. I mean, he's basically, yeah, he's doing what a lot of teenagers are, just a lot of people do, and he accepts what he believes, and he doesn't have much proof, but he just goes with it, and yeah, he wants to feel less isolated, and it's a It's a very good thing in this episode that I very much appreciated.
Right. Chloe has some good lines here. She says that he's more David Blaine than Wall of Weird. It's a topical reference. you know who David Blaine is?
Oh, I know who David Blaine is.
I think he's actually pretty impressive. I must say, I've seen some of his street magic, and I'm like, how did he get that deck of cards inside that glass wall? I don't know. But a great street magician. But yeah, Chloe basically says that he's no more E.T. than you are. It's like, aha, I get the irony because Clark is an E.T. But basically, they think it's just a byproduct. His healing, because Clark's like, look, you can't explain him healing Lana's horse. And, you know, Chloe's like, well, it's probably just a byproduct of meteorite poisoning, which, exactly, another freak of the week, right? It's not, because, yeah. You know, if they existed in a world where there were no meteor freaks, like the comic book Smallville, for example, and somebody showed up like this and had the power to heal, that would be more evidence than on the TV show Smallville, where there's teenagers get powers every week on this show, right? But anyway, Martha goes to see Helen at the hospital, so that's a plus one for our hospital visits, because she's going to the hospital for a medical thing, so that's a hospital visit, guys. Okay, I know she's not in a hospital bed, but counts as a hospital visit in my book. What do you think she tells Helen here? Because Helen's like, you know, Martha, in order for me to help you, you're going to need to be completely honest with me. And then we kind of, you know, get this shot of Martha, like, you know, oh, what am I going to tell her? And we cut away, and we never know how that conversation went, which I like, because it leaves some ambiguity, and you wonder what's going on here. Of course, Jonathan doesn't know she went. She even says that. But what do you think Martha told Helen here, Bill?
She might have just been forced to tell her the truth about Clark and all that stuff. It's either that, or it's just, like, something that I really don't want to get into. It could just be, like, something with the pregnancy that she thought it was odd. I also like how the ambiguity of it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, you don't know, but it makes you wonder.
I had forgotten about that whole, like, subplot of, you know, Helen knowing a lot more about the Kents than she should. And then, you know, spoilers, but considering where they go with Helen's character, I wonder, you know, how that even factors in or didn't factor in. But anyway, but yes, ambiguity is interesting. So Clark goes back to Cyrus's place because he wants to confront him about the faked heat vision. He's pretty upset about it, but he finds Lex there. And Lex, again, with the great lines, he says, I've always wanted to meet an alien. As he says this, ironically, to Clark and his best friend, who is an alien. But he put the pieces together that, you know, once he heard about what happened to Lana's horse, that the kid who had healed him was Cyrus, and that's how he figured out that Cyrus was the friend that Clark was talking about, who thought he was an alien. Lex finds the drawings that Cyrus had made of you know, the spaceship coming to Earth in the meteor shower, as Clark's spaceship did. And Lex says, hey, I've always had a theory that the meteor shower would be a perfect cover for an alien spacecraft to land on Earth. And, you know, I mean, he's right. So,
I had mixed feelings about this as well. It's like, okay, so this whole Cyrus dreaming stuff, it's apparently you could chalk it up as a side effect of the meteor. But it's like, you know, that is Clark's shuttle, and like later on the episode, the coordinates he gives are those of Krypton. Yeah. So it's like these dreams do have meaning, but they just never touch upon it. It's just like, okay.
Well, I think they're playing their hand too strong. You know, they should have dialed back a little bit. Maybe not have the coordinates of Krypton for one, and maybe not have, like, you know, talk about dreams and all that stuff. Like, I think that's too much. They could have taken out a couple of those things and could have been still on the fence enough to not be like, okay, well, obviously this is not gonna come together the way Clark hopes it does, right? But Lex leaves, and Cyrus had been hiding this whole time. He's like, I don't like your friend. It's just
he was hiding right behind the door too
the whole time. And again, Jeremy Elliott plays it really well. He really does seem like an alien, the way he interacts and talks to people, right?
Yeah, he's very deadpan, very just dead serious looking.
Like
at him.
You would imagine, like, this is like Commander Data from Star Trek, right? His performance here. Clark confronts him about the wall going on fire. He's like, I know you faked the fire, Cyrus. Cyrus doesn't deny that he faked the wall. He says, he only has the power to heal, not to harm. So that conversation is diffused, but again, Cyrus is impressed by Clark's earnestness in believing him. Clark truly believes he's an alien. So Cyrus shows him his transmission tower that will send a signal to his parents' ship to go bring him home. But he needs a transmitter back. And he says that the window of opportunity is only once every 200 years. Why he knows this, I don't know. Probably came to him in a dream, right? But his transmitter was confiscated at school after the incident in the electronics lab. So he asked Clark to help him get him back. So Clark and Cyrus break into Smallville High School late at night. They retrieve the transmitter. But who's waiting for him there but the three bullies, right? How they knew they would be there at that time is odd to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking the same quick thing. I'm like, okay, first off, why? It was an incident, and it's like, dude, okay, why are you so obsessed with just wanting to hurt this kid? And two, how did they know they were at the school? That's mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't explain it. It just sort of happens. It's like, you're dead meat. And let's talk about that tower real quick. That is an enormous tower. And like full of like wires and stuff. I thought it was really cool and everything. And of course it has the big antenna thing that shoots the sky beam hole.
Yes.
As long as it doesn't make another sky beam like we've seen in so many superhero films.
What a trope, right?
Oh God. I hate that trope so much.
Yeah, I guess his foster parents really don't care what he's doing back there because he's built a 20, 30-foot tower of just random mishmash technology, right, up to the sky. So, you know, pretty impressive for this kid who just moved here not too long ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, he really did spend all his time just building this tower. Yeah.
The bullies here, you know, there's three of them, so they surround Clark and Cyrus, and Clark's looking around not sure what to do, so then he sets one of the bullies' cars on fire and you know, blows up. So then they run off, and Cyrus figures out that Clark is an alien. Clark, this is silly to like try to convince Cyrus that he did. He's like, hey, way to go, Cyrus. You used your powers and you saved us. It's like, what do you, he knows he didn't use
heat vision. He just told him that he only has the power to heal, not harm. Come on, Clark.
Oh, man. But Superfan, he's still learning. He's on the job training here. Just give him a break. So Cyrus knows he's an alien. And then again, in my rewatch of Smallville here, I was surprised to find that Pete Ross, the voice of reason in this season, he's talking to Clark. He's like, you know, I can't believe Cyrus knows your secret. What's going to happen if he tells somebody else, right? And Clark's like, I don't know, Pete, what am I supposed to do? Beat up all those guys and run away at 1,000 miles an hour? I thought that was pretty funny. Clark is again, he's saying, oh man, Cyrus, he has the coordinates from Krypton. And Pete says, well, astronomers have been studying the meteor shower for years. You might have gotten the coordinates from that, which again is a huge stretch, but I like they at least try to explain how he could have gotten those coordinates, right?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense as to maybe he would remember something like that, but.
Because he would, yeah. if he truly believes he came to Earth in a meteor shower, he would obviously be reading and studying everything there is to know about it. So yeah. I can buy that. But again, pretty weak justification. It just shouldn't have given him the coordinates to Krypton is my deal. That conveniently Clark found last week or whenever, you know, how long ago it was in the chronology of the show when he met Dr. Swan. But what do we get here? We get our, you know, technically not our first mention of Kryptonite because Kryptonite was in the song Superman by Five for Fighting, which played at the end of Stray in season one. So they do say Kryptonite on the show that way. But this is the first in the show mention of Kryptonite because, you know, Pete has a great plan. He's like, well, if you really want to know, I can walk up to him with a meteor rock. And Clark says, it's called Kryptonite.
Is that spelled with a C or a K?
Yeah, it's like K.
Just as Lana comes in.
Yeah, but as you said, Lana has shown up to tell them that Cyrus was at the Talon when CBS came and took him away because his foster parents said he'd gotten too much to handle, obviously coming off of the incident at the school. Why Cyrus was at the Talon, the notoriously antisocial Cyrus was there, I have no idea. Probably just to give Lana an excuse to be the one to communicate that to them because that's, you know, she was there to see it. Now Cyrus has been taken to the medical center for, you know, evaluation, I guess. So that's another plus one. So we have plus two now for hospital visits in this episode because Cyrus is literally strapped to a hospital bed. So that counts as a hospital visit. And we have a plus one for our red jacket, blue shirt combination.
I was gonna point that out, and I also forgot about the Bechdel test
Helen Martha and Martha and Helen. Helen, yeah, that passes, right?
Talk about and it passes for once.
We'll add up the numbers at the end here, but yes, that scene was a pass of the Bechdel test, and yes, as I said, Clark is in his pseudo Superman costume now, so we know we know big things are going to happen for the rest of the episode. So Clark breaks him out, and Cyrus says, "Hey, you're an alien. Why don't you come with me?" Because Cyrus thinks he's going home, right? He's going up to the mothership. He's going home. He's like, "This is, you know, you're not from here either." And Clark says, "No, this is my real home." And Cyrus says, "You give me hope for this world, Clark. I wish there were more people here like you." So I'm like, "Oh, that's a nice moment there, between the two of them." And you know, Clark sets him on his way. But then we cut back to the Luther Mansion, where Helen confronts Lex about the locked door. He does a good way of diffusing or trying to diffuse her and just spin. And he's like, "Oh, look, it's just a private space. Look, I'll give you your own private room." You know? So good, right?
Yeah. It's classic Lex that he would just deflect something and just be like, "Oh yeah, sure. I'll just get you something else because I'm rich."
Now, what do you think though? From her perspective, is she in the right or is she in the wrong? Because I can see both sides. I mean, she says there can't be any locked doors between us, which is like cliche, but I understand. I mean, if you're gonna, you know, move in together and eventually get married, like you don't want any. There can't be any secret rooms like that. But at the same time, people need their privacy as well. So where do you stand on that?
Yeah.
Assuming that it truly was a private room and not what we find out it is.
No, but I really get it. It's like, yeah, you can understand that, but you know Lex well enough to know that he's hiding something, and that's not just a private room.
Right.
Like if it was just learning about something, or if she was just learning about him, then maybe I can understand if she would be, like, in the wrong. But she knows Lex well enough to know that he's hiding something. And I completely... I'm on her side, where it's like, yeah, if you want to be with me, then you have to be honest with me. And yeah, secrets will destroy a relationship, as is one of the many things that Smallville beats your head in with, like, secrets are bad, essentially. But no, I get it.
Well, I get it. The problem and all this stuff with Helen in retrospect is like in previous episodes, like in Visage, right, where she's framed as teaching Lex a lesson about relationships and loving and opening up and all that stuff. Again, where they chose to ultimately go with the character kind of negates all of this, and you're like, find yourself questioning, like, was this all a long con or what, right? I mean, not to get too much into detail about what they do with her, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it becomes kind of pointless.
I mean, at the time, I'm sure they didn't know. I mean, but they're wrapping up season two now, so I'm sure they had some idea of where they're going with her. But anyway, it does undercut all of this, like, Helen teaching Lex to be a better man, you know, stories that we have going on here. But next scene is Chloe and Pete. They show up in the loft, and Clark's loft, and they show him a missing child flyer from 1989. John and Maggie Burnett and their son William, who is the real Cyrus. They've deduced that they never found their bodies, and people thought they'd been vaporized in the meteor shower from a meteor hit. But that's, you know, two for one there. Obviously, that exposure to the meteorite at that young age gave Cyrus his healing powers. No explanation of, like, what the catalyst was of the healing power, but, you know, so be it, right? And then, you know, his parents had died, but it was close to where the elderly couple that adopted Cyrus lived, so they must have found him then, raised him then, and that pretty much confirms that, no, Cyrus is from Earth. He's not an alien. So with this information, Clark, I guess he decides, well, I better go talk to Cyrus because he thinks he's going to go up to a spaceship, so he runs over to... Well, which, I don't know why Clark left anyway with Cyrus, right? I thought he would... You think he would have stayed with him the whole time, since when they saved the transmitter, right, to... He's going to get teleported up to, you know, the spaceship the next day or whatever it is, right? Because you want to see that.
It was super weird of him to come with him, because he already said, he's like, no, my home is Smallville, or my home is Earth, and all that stuff. So it's like, really? Because you are going with Cyrus, now William, to this transmitter, so there's got to be some part of you where it's like, no, you kind of want to leave. There's got to be some part of you.
Well, it's like, what I'm saying is, like, he could at least gone and watched, you know, was say goodbye to E.T., right, in the movie, right? Just because he's leaving, because you don't have to go, too. You could say goodbye, but, you know, Cyrus, He's climbed up his transmitter, he activated it, and it's legit. Like we were talking about, it sends a legit cliche blue beam up into space, you know? At the time, you know, again, we were talking about Mon-El, Brainiac, stuff like that. At the time, there's a lot of fan speculation that, you know, maybe this will actually attract some extraterrestrial presence to Smallville. Like Brainiac, for example, but again, Brainiac was years away on the show still. But that's what fans on the internet were like, oh man, maybe the signal goes out into space and somebody finds it and comes to Smallville, like, trying to trace the signal. Like, people were just hoping something more would come from this. Because it is, I mean, you're shooting beams out into space. Somebody's going to hear that, right? As we come to know, there are other alien species out there. But unfortunately for Cyrus, the bullies show up to... They come back to for a third round with this guy who has, you know, set fire to a wall, blown up their truck, but they're not intimidated at all, apparently. They show up to tear his tower down.
Yeah, it's like, give him a break. I mean, the first time, I guess, because he took something from you without saying anything. Second time, they're just like, yeah, you made us look like an idiot, but still. And then third time, it's like, what are you doing? Guys, like, is that seriously all you have in this life, in this small town, is just bully this kid mercilessly with your trucks?
Well, the town is called Smallville, Billy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But, come on. There's got to be something else you could do.
And, you know, Cyrus starts freaking out because he's like, well, this is my one chance to go home, 200-year window, right? And these guys are going to come ruin everything. In a worst case scenario here, and they put a chain on the bottom of the tower and they start pulling it down with the pickup truck. Fortunately, Clark shows up while this is going on, pulls the tower back up, but the whiplash of him doing so flies the head bully back, and apparently it breaks his neck, is what the other guys say. So, do you think he's dead or just has a broken neck?
Well, I think he just had a... he might have been dead because, I mean, that neck break was pretty bad. I was surprised that they actually showed it.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I thought we were just going to hear the guy say that, but when they show, like, his head and torso, I'm like, ooh, that's pretty twisted. I just didn't know if I should count it as a Smallville student high death, but I don't think he was dead. I think he just had a broken neck, so we'll leave it at that. But Clark has put the tower back up right, but Cyrus has fallen out of it, and Clark has caught him. And Cyrus is like, oh no, I have to get up there. My parents are waiting for me. And we see this light in the sky, and you're thinking, whoa, is the spaceship really coming? Like, what is this, right? Clark, this is a perfect Superman moment. He convinces Cyrus, like, look, you have the power to heal, and you can save that guy's life. You know, even though this guy has been an antagonist and a bully, Superman would still choose to save his life, and convinces Cyrus to do so as well. And even though Cyrus thinks he might be missing his only opportunity to go home, he does it anyway, and he heals Kyle, is the bully's name. I've been calling him the first bully or whatever, the lead bully. He's the other guys are just his lackeys. It's like standard, like, Back to the Future bully system, right? You have Biff and, like, the lackeys, right? And this guy is the Biff, right? Nameless lackeys. One of those lackeys in the Back to the Future is played by Billy Zane, by the way, which is an interesting bit of trivia. The guy that wears the 3D glasses all the time. So I would love to see Billy Zane. I say this at every opportunity. I'd love to see Billy Zane play Lex Luthor. I think
he'd be perfect for Lex Luthor.
I mean, people say just because he's bald. I'm like, well, okay, yes, but he looks exactly like Lex Luthor. He's a good actor. He has a great screen presence and a really cool voice. So what more do you want? Unfortunately, on Supergirl, I think they've aged the characters down too much. Like, I think he's too old to play Lex Luthor on Supergirl, for example. So I don't think that would happen. And I'm not sure when the next opportunity will come up for Lex Luthor casting, but again, if Billy Zane never plays Lex Luthor, that's one of the great missed casting opportunities of all time.
Yeah, everybody was like, oh, Bryan Cranston for Lex Luthor. I'm like, no, you're only saying that because he was on Breaking Bad, right? And he was bald, and he was a bad guy there. It's like, you just want to see his role from Breaking Bad. But no, like, Billy Zane has played villains in the past, and he has done it well. Mm-hmm. So, I totally agree with you. And, yeah, we could get into Jesse Eisenberg, but I don't really want to.
Yeah, that, we'll save that for another time.
We will save that for another time when it's more appropriate.
So Cyrus, he heals Kyle, and, you know, he's okay. His neck straightens out, and he gets up, and he's all right. But then Cyrus is like, oh, I missed it. And then he collapses because he basically has a psychotic break here because he thinks he's missed his one opportunity to go home. But then, you know, we get the old X-Files trope of that light we saw in the sky. It turns out it was just a helicopter shooting a spotlight at them. And it's like, oh, this is the county, blah, 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 blah. And I don't even know what they say, but I, you know, good on the Kansas government for noticing a beam of light shooting into space and going to investigate it. I'm really impressed they got there so fast, though, right?
Yeah, I was very impressed, and I was also impressed of how steady that light was, because, I mean, when you're a helicopter moving, the light tends to move with you, but, I mean, yeah, I get what it was for, and you're right, it did remind me of the X-Files, where it's like, no, it's going to pull the rug out from under you at the last minute.
Well, at this point, I guess they were trying one last attempt to make a twist, like, maybe he really is an alien, right? Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, okay, that was interesting. And that's why I think people may have been expecting more to come from this. But nothing more came from it. Sorry, guys. You know, everything wraps up here, and then we go the next day at the Kent Farm, and Jonathan and Martha console Clark about Cyrus. And this is a good scene, except for the really lame excuse they come up with. Like, Jonathan flat-out asks Clark. It's like they're writing the script, like, okay, we need to explain everything we brought up. So Jonathan flat-out asks Clark. He's like, Clark, how do you think Cyrus knew how to draw your ship? he just comes out and says it. Like, the audience will want to know. And Clark says, well, he was found, you know, near where the spaceship crashed and you guys found me. So my guess is that he saw it and then just kind of made it his own backstory. Because, you know, when children deal with trauma, sometimes they create, like, a fake world around themselves to cope, right? And clearly that's what happened with Cyrus. He just kind of conflated his experiences the day of the meteor shower with, you know, the life that he would have wanted, because he's at that age where he can't really remember anything. So he just, and he was probably always a little odd, you know, and he just embraced that and decided that he was an alien. And he had the healing power. So, I mean, when you have something like that at such a young age, you think that's evidence, right?
You totally understand the point of view of Cyrus and why he would believe he is an alien. I mean, also at such a young age to lose your parents, you would want to escape that, really? And, yeah, apparently being an alien is the way to escape for this particular incident.
Right.
Or instance, whatever.
But it is a good message at the end where Clark says, I just don't understand, you know, why would Cyrus give up what he thought was his only opportunity to get home to save Kyle, the school bully? And, they tell him, well, Cyrus is a lot more like you than we thought, right? I'm like, oh, that's a good moral message, a good Superman, you know, moral message, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, even if you had this, then you still do the right thing. If it's possible, you do the right thing no matter what.
Now, I want to talk about this for a second. Have you seen the movie K-Pax?
No, I have never
okay.
heard.
Okay, this episode... First of all, go see K-Pax. It has Jeff Bridges and Kevin Spacey in it, right?
Oh, okay.
So what more do you need, right?
Yeah.
And that film, in this episode, I'm going to start a new category, by the way, called, and I've been trying to think about the name to call this, but movie plots for episodes. I think that's what I'll call the category, right? And this is going to be a plus one for movie plots for episodes. Yeah. And I might change the name at some point, but for now, that's what we're going to call it. I'll think about it. So by the time we publish this episode, I'll have a real title for it. But in the movie K-Pax, Kevin Spacey plays a person who believes he's an alien, and he gets put in a mental institution. And Jeff Bridges is his psychiatrist. And it's just a very fascinating exploration of, like, you know, this guy who says he's an alien, and he does certain things occasionally that make you question if he really is an alien or not. So it keeps the ambiguity very strong, and it's really vague. And then at the end of the movie, I'm going to spoil. Should I spoil it? I guess I have to because we're talking about it, right? The end of the movie is similar to this episode in the fact that a psychotic break happens and he shuts down, right? Because that's what happens to Cyrus here, right? Like, the moment comes that he's supposed to leave, and then, you know, there is some kind of event that takes place, but then at the end of it, you know. As Clark explains here, the doctor says Cyrus had a complete, you know, mental breakdown where he's like shut down. And something, you know, it's similar to what happens in K-Pax. I don't want to get into the details because I recommend everybody see it if you haven't. It's a very interesting movie. And, but it's, to me, like when I saw this, I was like, oh, this is K-Pax. that's the first, and it only come out like a year or two maybe before. So it was all very recent. And nobody, it's one of these movies that has fallen through the cracks, I feel, but it has some A-list talent. And, very interesting kind of, I don't know, soft-spoken science fiction, if you will. I guess that's the best way to describe it. But it really reminded me of this episode. Just the plot really And the great thing about K-Pax is it maintains the ambiguity all the way to the end of the movie. Like, you can walk away at the movie and you can interpret it either way. Like, there's many ways to see what, like, interpret the story, right? And I think those are, like, I love The Twilight Zone. It's one of my favorite shows as well. And I think some of the best episodes of The Twilight Zone are ones that are, like, they could go either way. You know, like, it isn't necessarily like, oh, well, it was the devil, or, or, oh, it was aliens, right? It could be like, well, this guy could be crazy, or it could be right. I'm not really sure. But again, like we were talking about earlier, right? The ambiguity creates conversation, and it's interesting, right? It creates interest as well. So, anyway, all that to say that we get a plus one for movie plot as an episode for K-Pax here, because, especially the end, very similar circumstances take place with Kevin Spacey character and with Cyrus in this episode. So go out there and see K-Pax, guys. I don't know if it's on streaming. I feel like everything is on streaming now in some capacity or another. If it's not, go down to your local Blockbuster Video and rent it. No. Oh, those are the days when you can rent stuff. Maybe Redbox has it. I don't know. But anyway, K-Pax is a great movie. Everybody go see it. And Kevin Spacey went and played Lex Luthor. So there you go. There's a Superman connection for you. So our next scene is Lex showing Helen the secret room. And it's the Clark room. I love that so many people have been tweeting about this kind of stuff on the internet, and it's hilarious, and I'll retweet them on our Twitter. But it's like, Clark, I know this is hard for you to believe, but this room isn't about you. It's like, cut to a wall full of Clark pictures. So you know, this room, we didn't know it, but we've seen this room before. It's the room that Lex put the Porsche in from the pilot, right? He saved it from the accident. And that's a very eccentric thing to do, right? A Lex Luthor type would do that. But this room has really expanded in the year or so since we've seen it. Not only do we see the Porsche, we see the digital recreation of the crash that he had Nixon make for him. We see artist, digital representations of the Kawachi Cave paintings. We see that digital scan of the octagonal disc. We see the Nicodemus flower from Nicodemus. We see the Rush bug from Rush, as I call it, the Rush bug, no one else to call it. And then we see Meteor Ox, both red and green. And then we see the family tree that Clark filled out in Rosetta. And then we see what I assume is Clark's birth certificate or adoption certificate or whatever, with a giant picture of Clark on it, which is really, like, if you just took that one thing away, you could probably get away with everything else in this room, Lex. But the giant picture of Clark is really creepy. And, I mean, he says, this is my obsession. You know, he shares it with Helen. So he has a very, well, I mean, he has a very eccentric and, you know, attitude about, an elitist attitude about what he's doing. And Helen says, you know, there's a lot here about the Kents. And he says, they're an interesting family. Don't you think?
Yeah.
And then, like, at that point, you're like, what does she know? Right? Because I completely forgot about this whole subplot here. But what does she know? Right? I mean, what do you think they talk about here?
Yeah.
Obviously, she doesn't tell him Clark's secret, so.
Clearly not. But it's like, oh, okay. If she had suspicions, this pretty much confirms it. Because all this weird stuff has happened. And also, she could just be thinking, yeah, my boyfriend's crazy. I mean, you're right. It's very eccentric. And he keeps everything that's weird on in this room. And it's building up a good case of what the heck is happening in this town. Because everyone knows that there's something up. But Lex is the one that has the resources and is smart enough to figure out all these events are somehow connected, and yeah, he's sharing it with Helen, and it shows that he trusts her, and yeah, it's a big step for them, but it can go either way. It's, again, that ambiguity.
Yeah, this is a great scene, though. I almost wish it was the last scene of the episode. Right? There are many episodes of Smallville where I wish they would flip the last couple scenes. I know why they do it, because they want to end in the loft with Clark and Lana and the shipper stuff, right? Because it's just the WB at the time, and that's what they were all about. But, like, the difference between, like, a show like The X-Files and a show like Smallville is The X-Files would have ended on this scene, you know, with some ominous music, right? But anyway, and speaking of... But, yeah, speaking of the last scene here with Clark and Lana, I had completely forgotten about this scene. I forgot that it existed, with them talking. When I saw it, because I remember Chloe, I was like, yeah, Chloe was cool with him being an alien, but I remember Lana wasn't. But wait, they didn't come up. And I'm like, oh, it's in this scene here, right? And then, of course, we get the song The Other Side by David Gray. I really like this song. Again, I love the music they use on Smallville. It was and is the soundtrack of my life. It's great. They talk about Tyson, how he's going to stay, the horse, going to stay on the Kent farm. Another character never mentioned again, so add Tyson to the list of characters like Lucas Luthor and Henry Small and Martha's dad, whose first name escapes me, but Mr. Clark. Characters that we introduced in season 2 and then after season 2 as if they never existed. So add Tyson the horse to that list of characters. But this is where Clark asked Lana what she would think if Cyrus was an alien, and she... I mean, to her credit, look, I know people like dogging on Lana, and we have some fun with it, too, and she's written poorly sometimes, but to her credit, she's honest about it. She's like, yeah, I would be kind of freaked out by it. And she's like, does that make me a bad person? Clark says, no, just honest. And I feel like, look, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Although it just goes to show that, yeah, Clark, you should be with Chloe, not Lana, because Chloe, Chloe's totally cool with all that stuff, and Lana's not, right?
Oh, very much so. And it's like, dude, if she would freak out that you're an alien, then how... You wouldn't be able to tell her, really. I mean...
But that's why. But see, that's why scenes like this do work. Because you always say, Clark, just tell her you're an alien, man. But you know, because he knows he's had so many conversations with her over the years about this kind of stuff and how she think it'd be weird and how she blames the meteor shower for... Well, obviously, well, the meteor shower killed her parents, right? So she might transfer that blame onto him. That's one of his greater fears that we see actually materialized in the episode Scare in season 4. Where she blames him for killing her parents because he came with a meteor shower. So all this stuff informs why he never tells her, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, but still. It's sometimes it's frustrating.
But then they see a shooting star, which, again, at the time, fans were like, oh, a shooting star? Is that like a spaceship? Is it connected to the beam that Cyrus didn't have in the space? Is Brainiac coming? Right, it's all the fanboy speculation you get, right, after this kind of stuff. You know, it's, you know, the internet. That's what you do. If you go back to the Krypton site forums, I'm sure there's plenty of threads on this kind of stuff. But it doesn't mean anything. Lana kind of jokes that, oh, you think it's a spaceship? And it's cute to her because she thinks Cyrus and the whole alien thing was not true. But, you know, it's not so cute to Clark because he's like, yeah, I was hoping that really was a spaceship. But now I'm just all alone like I thought. But there's been a good sense of awkwardness between them now. Like you know, there was a tough stretch there in season 2, like the red kryptonite, both times, you know, causing some trouble between Clark and Lana. So I feel like they're at least back to, you know, having a nice awkwardness there between them. Like, yeah, we like each other, but nothing's gonna happen right now for various reasons, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, they always have, I think they have good chemistry. Like, just the actors in general, I think they have good chemistry, and it's like, yeah, there's something there, but we can't really act on it, again, for various reasons. And now that some of those reasons are gone or have been resolved, it's like, I like this playful banter between the two.
Same.
And that's one of the things I absolutely love about Smallville is the banter is very well written. I mean, there are some lines that are very cringeworthy, granted, but overall, I think it gets the point across and it helps further the story, and it's very good.
The doctors say that Cyrus had a complete mental breakdown. His body's there, but his mind is gone. They don't know if he'll recover. Transferred him to a special hospital in Metropolis.
Son, how do you think Cyrus was able to draw your ship?
His house was near where you guys found me. My guess, he was outside and saw the ship land. Memory stayed with him, and over time, he thought that past was his own.
We know how much you wanted to believe that there could be somebody else out there like you.
What is it, Clark?
Why would Cyrus pass up what he believed was his only opportunity to go home? To save Kyle, the school bully.
Because he was a lot more like you than we ever thought.
Visitor got a 7.9. out of 10 on IMDb, and the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5 in Neil Bailey's review there. So, you know, relatively higher, middle to higher scores for this episode. What would you give it, Billy, on the letter scale that we do here on Always Hold On Smallville?
I'm going to go by letter grade as well.
As
I'm
going to give it
as I should. I'm going to give it a B minus just because it's not great, but it's not bad either. I think it's pretty good. It touches on some good things. And after Rosetta, this is a very good grade for me. And yeah, I enjoyed this episode. Is it probably one of my best? No, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a B plus myself. I found myself enjoying and appreciating this episode a lot more now than I had back in the day. Again, you're coming off Rosetta, right? And you're like, oh, that was amazing. And then you get this, you're like, oh, well, I mean, I was hoping for something more, and the alien thing was kind of botched, but I give the B plus is for concept more than anything, right? Heck, when I first saw it, I might have given it like a B minus or C plus even, you know, back in the day, because I was just like, oh, he wasn't an alien. That stuff doesn't really add up. But I mean, the story, the concept of what they were saying here about like Clark being alone and what if someone else with, you know, that people thought were an alien was around, what people's reactions would be. That's always a good way to gauge how the other characters would behave towards Clark if they knew his secret. So I like it when they do stuff like that. So B plus for me for Visitor. So when we average out, this episode got a solid B between two of us, Billy. So good job, Visitor. So our last order of business is the series tally board. So we have a plus two for hospital visits because Cyrus got taken to the hospital and then Martha went to the hospital to have a checkup from Helen. So that's plus two there, but brings us to 24 so far. 24 hospital visits so far in almost two seasons of Smallville. And we got a plus one for our red jacket, blue shirt combination, which brings us to five so far. He's worn that five times in Smallville so far, and that number is going to skyrocket as we get into the, you know, I think in season, like, I swear, in season five and season, like, seven, like, he wears that every episode, I swear. The blue shirt and the red jacket. But that's those tally numbers. And like I said earlier about our new category, movie plot as an episode, plus one, because the plot of this episode, Visitor, is the plot of the movie K-Pack. So go check it out. Again, check it out. Sorry if I gave away a little too much, but I think, you know, what you think I spoiled it for you. Billy, you're still interested to see it, right?
Yeah, I'll still see it. I mean, I love Jeff Bridges and Kevin Spacey, and the concept it sounds pretty cool.
Cool. Well, check it out. Let me know what you think. And I think you guys will enjoy it out there. But yeah, that's a plus one for a movie plot as an episode. And the Bechdel test, we got to pass this week. Because as we mentioned earlier, Martha and Helen scene, that's a Bechdel test pass. So good on you, Smallville. So that's the Smallville tally board for this week's episode. So that's going to do it for us this week. Billy, thanks so much, man, for taking the time being on the podcast. If people want to find you out there on the internet, man, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BBusterBill. All the B's are capitalized. Find me on Instagram, BlockbusterBill, just all not capitalized. Billy Paulhan on Facebook. And just hit me up. I'm totally open to meeting new people and just talking about things. And it's really cool.
Now, you do a blog for Odd-Shaped Panel, is that correct?
I do. That is how we came into contact, because my very first blog post was about the entire series Smallville, and I did a retrospective of it, and you helped clear up some of the facts. And I do that when I can, and I would say check that out, as well as some of the other bloggers on there. And yeah, this was a ton of fun, and definitely want to come back. And I have a friend who is a big Smallville fan that I will keep him informed. And if I can get him on the show, then I would. And I think you would really like him. And yeah, I can't wait to do this again.
Awesome, man. Yeah, no, it was great having you. A lot of Smallville knowledge, a lot of Superman fandom there. I love having new voices on the show too, because I mean, obviously we have our kind of core group here, but it's always great to get somebody else's take in here too, because everybody has their own unique Smallville set of opinions, and that's what's fun about revisiting such an old show like this, because people come to it in so many different ways over the years, right? I mean, you recently found it, you know, just a few years ago, and I've been watching it, gosh, Smallville, 16 years now it's been on the air, so... So everybody comes to it from a different place and has a unique perspective, and it's fun just talking out these episodes with everybody. Because we went on a few tangents, but that's great. Like, every episode of Smallville has its own tangent you can go off of for whatever reason, right? And those are fun as well. You never know what we're going to talk about here on Always Old in the Smallville. The episode is just kind of a framework, and then we just kind of go where the conversation takes us. So it's a lot of fun, and... As for the show, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysSmallville. You can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com. And as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. And I'm also the host of Standard Orbit, a Star Trek original series podcast on the Trek FM network. And you can find us there on at Trek FM on Twitter, and search us on Facebook at Trek FM. So... Podcasting, man, that's the name of the game. And stay tuned, because next week we'll be back talking about Precipice. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Meet me on the other side. Meet me on the other side. I'll see you on the other side. Love's a raven when it